I know it's a little weird, but welcome everybody. This is a special Thursday night. We're calling this show. It's I'm sorry. What is the name of this show again, Donna?
Giving Children Hope.
That's right. But it's on the Sovereign Internet Radio, and it's also on, I believe, two Sovereign Internet Radio streams, and it's on my live stream. So I'm simulcasting on three different streams. I'm Stephen Roberts, and I normally say cancel a cabal, but I can't say this because this is not what this show is, Giving Children Hope. I have two friends, one's from Canada, and the other's from the state of Maine, here in the U.S. I want to introduce Donna first, from Maine. Hello, Donna. Donna Ferris.
Hi. Thank you, Stephen, for hosting the show Giving Children Hope on these networks. Thank you for allowing us an opportunity to reach out to as many children as we can and let them know that we're all screaming for them together.
Yes, absolutely. And I have another friend from Manitoba, Canada. Her name is Tanis. So welcome to the show, Tanis.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here with the special guest we have tonight.
Yes, Donna, you want to start us off here, introduce our guest?
Yes, I'd like to introduce everyone tonight to Cindy Dumas and her son Damon. This is quite a mother-son duo that they have an inspiring story to share. And I'd like to first kind of just open it up to Damon and welcome him. Thank you so much, Damon, for being willing to come on and share, you know, your experience of what it's taken, the courage. And you were just talking briefly with us about the self-preservation versus the actual heroism. So could you please introduce yourself and kind of tell us a little bit about that?
Okay. I'm Damon Moulter. That's my father's name, though. I'm actually going to be changing that. First of all, thank you for having me on. I've always heard I have a face for radio. I tried to take it as a compliment. And what I was just talking to you about was that a lot of people have been very gracious, very humbling almost, in lauding compliments on me. And my response to those is always that there are a lot of people with inspiring stories, and what I did took courage, but the fact is that I was thrown into this situation. I didn't choose to be a victim of abuse. I didn't choose to be a victim of government corruption. It was something that was forced on me, and I only have the choices to deal with it or not deal with it. And everything I've done, no matter how much courage or strength it would have taken, it was all out of self-preservation. And that's why I'm so glad I can be on tonight, is that I don't have to do this. I've had to do everything else, but I don't have to do this. This I'm actually doing situation to help children everywhere, and that's the only thing I've done so far that would really give me any moral authority, in my opinion.
Wow. God bless your heart for all that you are doing, you're choosing to do. You're right. You said it. You now have the freedom to make choices. Would you mind sharing a little bit about what you actually ended up doing? So they can really understand the courage that you've had to take. I also wanted to just throw in to let everyone know that you were 17 years old now?
Yes, 17 years old.
Yes. Oh, bless your heart. My oldest son is 17 as well. So do you mind sharing with us? You have a very exciting story, the amount of courage.
Okay. My story really starts, unfortunately, like so many others, which is simply I was abused. An abusive father, he sexually abused me for years, and unfortunately, like so many other stories, the courts completely failed me. They gave more custody to my father. They were corrupt. And the good difference, though, and the unfortunate difference, is that I ran away when I was 15, and I stayed in hiding until just this last March, when I finally was able to get emancipated and be free of my abusive father. And I say that's unfortunate because it's so rare in this movement and with this issue to have success stories that I'm coming onto a radio show just because there are so few children who are managed to make it out of this. And it's just appalling. It's a shame that for having gone through what I've gone through, it makes me special. Every child should be saved. Every child should be a survivor of this. Every child should be strong enough and not destroyed enough and free enough to be able to talk about this with you today.
Amen. You're absolutely right. That's exactly what happens. They get their voice taken from them, their freedom, everything. And you're right. It should be all children, all of our children. And that's exactly what we're going to get to more a little further on in the show, is we will get to exactly what this is that's happening and some possible solutions. But Damon, would you mind sharing with everyone the terms of emancipation and what you actually had to decide to do, which I thought was just brilliant?
Well, I can't actually take credit for the idea. I actually got it from someone else. But there was a story in Florida that was what inspired this, of a child who married to get emancipated. And I saw that and I thought, well, at that point I had failed everything. The courts had failed me on everything. I had ran away for over a year. I had tried going through family court. I had tried a restraining order. I had tried emancipating myself through the normal means of filing for an emancipation. I was denied at every turn. So finally I saw that, and I actually had to get married because under California law, that emancipated me, and because of that I'm now free and safe and able to be on this show.
Wow. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. God bless your heart. Thank you, God, that he got you out of that. Tanis, I wanted to open this up to you as well. I know you're kind of staying quiet in the background, but please feel free. You're probably edging to say something.
I just want to acknowledge here that Damon's mom, who's on the line on the show, that she probably tried for years, also unsuccessfully, through the courts to be reunited with you and your brothers. And I don't know if you want to say anything about what you did, Cindy. So Damon wouldn't have had to fight so hard. You know, when I read the posts and watched the videos that Damon produced, and I just thought, this is unreal that any youth has to fight this hard. And I knew that you were behind him fighting for years, too. So if you too want to share anything about that.
Oh, sure, yes. Damon's story that he started with at 15 actually was the end of a very, very long nightmare in family court. Mine was a 10-year nightmare. I know there's some that have been even more than 10 years. So, Tanis, you're right. I fought like crazy for almost 10 years before Damon actually had to do it himself. I used every avenue I could, and I was in hiding for 3 years with the boys previously. So that was the second time Damon went into hiding, when he went into hiding by himself, the one that he was talking about. But before that, we were in hiding for 3 years, and before that, I had fought for 2 years to try to protect him. So there really is just no way in the family court system to protect children. So that's the really sad part, that Damon had to go to those lengths to get protected in the end. But at least he is, so we're thankful for that.
It's a child's entire childhood, and most children age out before they're given protection. no matter what the mother's done, no matter what the child has done. In this case, what Damon figured out to do is quite unique and very creative, but in all of these cases, it seems like the children have to age out till they're 18, and it is appalling.
Right, and it shows the extent that our children have to go through to fight for their lives. You know, Damon, you tried everything, every avenue and entity set up to protect you failed you and your mother and brothers on every level. I appreciate the fact that you're coming on this radio show tonight to tell everybody about this, because this is what it takes and what's needed to open people's eyes and their hearts so they can see, especially the ones that have no reason to walk inside of a family law courtroom. They have no idea what's going on behind those doors. So I applaud you, Damon. I know I respect your wishes about that. But you are right now a very special young man. Just as I feel the same about my children and Tannis's children and all the children that are caught up in this. Every single child is very special and is a hero already in my mind.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate the chance to come on. And to be honest, really, I just hope that you're right. I hope that me coming on here will be able to make a difference. I hope that me coming on here will be able to save children. I hope that me coming on here will be able to bring publicity or open someone's eyes or affect some amount of change, because this needs to change. And that's the bottom line.
That is the bottom line. Damon, if there's other children I know tonight that are actually listening, and I wonder, you know, what words of encouragement and words of wisdom, these are children that are both caught in this kidnapping type situation, this custody situation, and then children that have escaped as well, figured out a way to escape, and they're listening to you tonight. Is what would be something you'd say to just inspire them to not give up, to give up that hope?
Well, I'm considering giving a really cliched, ranty speech about stay strong, but to be perfectly honest, I can't do that. I was strong, I made it out, and I can promise any child listening right now that it gets better. That one day you're going to succeed, you're going to find your freedom, and it's really great. It's really awesome. I'm doing well now, but there's always a time where every child going through this, parents going through this as well, that there just doesn't seem to be any hope. When you've tried every avenue and it's just corruption at every end, when you look into the future and you can't see any way out, but there is a way out, and once you get out, the sun's shining outside of the cave that you fortunately have been put into.
Very well said, very well said. Someone in the chat room had said that you are a well-spoken young man, and I'm going to have to agree with them. It was Charlie in the chat room. There's a question in the chat room, if you don't mind me asking you, Damon, from Charlie. He says, is Damon still married?
I believe we have filed the divorce papers. I'm no longer married. I am divorced, which is a really funny story to tell my friends. Oh, are you single? Yeah, I'm divorced.
How old are you, Damon?
Hmm?
How old are you?
I'm 17.
Okay. So, when did you get married? At 16?
Yes, I was 16 at the time.
Okay. You've already done a lot more than a lot of 25-year-olds.
Well, it wasn't a real marriage, Stephen. You wouldn't know that. It was a paper marriage. So.
He had to use the legal system, like get a legal civil marriage, in order to emancipate himself, to be considered an adult, and that's just unreal. that a youth has to do that. But and I don't know if it would be allowed in every state. You had to go to Nevada? Is that true,
yeah.
Damon?
Yes, we did. You had to go to Nevada for it.
One of the things that I thought when I was watching and keeping, like, you put a few YouTubes out, and they got posted on, was it Safe Kids International and other Facebook pages, so that's the power of social media, and I thought, surely, the courts will give this young man at 16 a protection order, because a child even of 12 is supposed to, here in Canada apparently, to be able to make an application for a protection order and get one from abuse, protection from abuse, and the courts would not even give you that.
No, they really wouldn't, because just like every other avenue I've been down, it was just a dead end. It was a dead end inside of the system, perhaps because of how much influence and perhaps even publicity that my case had. There simply was no way for them to go back on their corruption. They were corrupt, and to reverse any orders to grant me that protection order would have meant that the other judges were corrupt, and of course you can't do that. It's a buddy-buddy system. Everyone sticks up for each other, and once one person says something, everyone has to echo it. Otherwise, it shows how bad what's going on is going on.
Exactly.
Right, but even the fact that there are laws in the states, the Constitution, the federal law. In Canada, we have a Constitution, too, where it talks about everybody's rights, equal rights to freedom. So by virtue of the fact that you were growing up and 16, which is in Canada and probably in the States, the legal age of consent, like to get married, to drive a car, to agree to sexual relations with someone that's much older, actually, and yet you could not be free of a custody order, like you were, like these young people, like children are in these situations, treated like property until they're 18.
Well, to be fair, the judges, at least that I've dealt with, they break moral standards on a much higher level than that. Because what you're describing is, yeah, a 16-year-old should be able to be free, and that's just a regular moral idea. It's written into the laws, but it's not specified quite so clearly. It's just a general concept of this is fair. But my judges have gone outside the bounds of very black and white laws, not ones that are open to interpretation, not ones that say judges must consider this. No, they have outright black and white broken laws that we've even brought to their attention that they're breaking in order to keep me down.
Yep, exactly. The same thing in my case. It's part of what you said earlier. This is a certain level of criminal behavior on their part that you can't let one get caught, because once one gets caught, they all start to tumble. So they all just back each other up. It doesn't matter how loud a child screams. It doesn't matter what a child tries to go through to escape. They're going to continue to send that child back to the abuser. They're going to continue to block and bury and cover all evidence. You're right. You said it. And this is such a pandemic at this point. It's outside of the United States. This is international. Everybody said it. We see it. It just goes back to that same thing. Our children are forcefully silenced and taken in as property.
Hey, Donna?
Yes.
I have a, I don't know whether it's a theoretical question or not, but I remember quite a few years back, probably more than 20 some odd years ago, the one actor, he was a teen at the time, or he was a preteen or something. It was Corey Haim, the one that committed suicide a couple years back. He actually divorced his parents. Or maybe it was Corey Feldman, one or the other. I think it might have been Feldman. Do you know of any children that have ever done anything like that? like gotten some type of a emancipation by that means?
I don't know, not myself. This is, though, the level that children end up going through. They seek out what laws that can benefit them if they were an adult, so to speak. That emancipation means to become an adult, take on responsibility as an adult.
Right.
And it gives you freedoms and choices as an adult. And so it's that. I mean, they have to divorce their parents. They have to try to become emancipated. But as Damon said, even going into a probate court, they've got to, you know, the level of corruption has to continue to cover itself. So even a probate court where a child can go and request emancipation, they're not necessarily going to be successful. So it's rare for me personally to hear about the extent that Damon himself had to go through by using our laws to become legally an adult in order to escape with his life.
Sure. Damon, are you still friends with your ex-wife? I know that sounds a little bit...
So, distantly, but not particularly close by any means, no.
Was it a, I don't want to pry too much and be personal, but was it a marriage for convenience, or was it a marriage of love, I guess, if you want to ask, if you want to say? Do you know what I mean by a marriage of convenience?
Yeah, it was definitely a marriage of convenience. There's okay. No secrecy about that, no question about that. I got married to emancipate myself.
Okay.
It was a marriage of convenience. I mean, she's a nice girl, but it wasn't a marriage of love, no.
Okay.
I would use the word necessity.
Necessity.
Necessity,
okay.
Yes, sure. Exactly. At that point, necessity is very good. Term.
A new term, a marriage of necessity. We're going to have to create that term for some other kids.
Right.
I think there's a few other kids that are, after Damon got married, got the idea and are hoping to get emancipated as well that way. So, who knows?
What is shocking, you know, because they wouldn't have to admit any mistakes if they allowed youth of at least 16. A lot of people think 12, 14, 13-year-olds have a choice. They don't in family court. And even to let a 16-year-old finally be free of a custody, controlling custody order, wouldn't be admitting any mistakes. It would be, hey, okay, you know, you've outgrown the need for a custody order to rule and dictate your life. And that obviously doesn't factor in when they're thinking, when they have to realize that these 16-year-olds are going to be 17 and then 18 in short order. So they continue to silence the youth and not give them any rights and freedoms that other youth have that aren't held under these custody orders, like bondage. And these children are turning 18.
Well, yeah, you have to look at this as these are not normal custody cases. These are what I call cover-up cases or court licensed abuse cases, where the reason they're not letting them be free at 16, it doesn't have anything to do with reality or, you know, logic. It is that they're covering up abuse, and that the longer they can keep these children silent, the better for them, because they don't want, I mean, they're probably not real happy that Damon's coming out here talking right now. They would rather him be under the control of his abusive father until he's 18, because this gives the child power, and that's exactly what they don't want children to have. So it's a deliberate tactic that's used. It doesn't make sense at all, like most other things in these cases don't. These cases are treated differently than normal ones.
Hey, Cindy?
Yeah?
Are you on another phone or the same phone?
The same phone.
Okay. Maybe if you can grab the receiver... You need to, I don't know, speak up a little bit whenever you talk. You're quite a bit low, but Damon is fine, though.
Oh, okay, I'll pull it closer to me. Is this better now?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Cindy, Would you be able to kind of share with us Safe Kids International? And then I'd like to pose Stephen's question to you about any other success cases where children were forced into using a law such as marriage, emancipation, and such in order to escape with their lives. If you've seen it.
As far as I know, no other child has used this law yet. Damon was referring to the one that we used as an example, and that was a little different case. It was actually a father who was protecting his son, and the mother and her husband were trying to send his son off to a camp, and I'd like to a little bit later talk about the camps as it used to control and silence children. But the father in this case didn't want his son to have to go to these horrible camps. So he came up with the idea. He was a millionaire and just flew his housekeeper's daughter and his son. They all flew out to Nevada. And the reason they chose Nevada and the reason people need to choose Nevada, it's one of the few states that you only need one parent's permission at 16 years old to get married. And so if you have one parent there, signing it, that's enough. And then, I think in all 50 states, no matter what state you get married in, it's recognized by every other state. So you're automatically, I'm not an attorney. You have to check with, an attorney about this, but I think that means you're automatically emancipated in your own state since you're considered married. But also that was not such a happy ending because this man had, there was an order by the court for this child to go into a camp, and when the father did this, they found him in contempt of that court order because by assisting the child in getting married, he was evading this court order, so they decided that was contempt, and the last I heard is he was going to jail for 6 months, and I haven't heard anything since whether he got out of it. I hope he did. I actually tried to contact him, and I was not able to, but there are some consequences for it if you're, evading a court order. There was no court order in Damon's case, and I think they were pretty tired of the whole thing anyway, so there was no action taken, but, there are things to consider.
Yeah. And you had quite a bit of publicity as well, Damon was mentioning. Maybe that's a good play into Safe Kids International even.
Yes, he was featured on Fox. That was the best media that we had gotten was with Fox News LA. The reporter actually went and met him in hiding and filmed him and did a whole story on him. And so that really helped a lot that now we're up to thousands or millions even of people that have seen it. And so that did give him a certain amount of power. And they actually came to Nevada and filmed in Nevada when he was getting married. So, yes, that was extremely helpful. Fox LA has been wonderful in covering our cases. They're covering many different cases.
That's incredible. They gave Damon his voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. And we need the media more. One of our problems with our issue is that the media doesn't want to take it. And, I'm so thankful to Stephen and for having us on and giving us a voice in this form of media. It's really wonderful. Very few people are wanting to take this on, so it's great.
Yep, you said it. That's right. Thank you, Stephen. Tannen, go ahead.
Cindy, and Damon, what do you think are the reasons? I've heard some myself. But from doing the publicity you're doing with Safe Kids International and getting this publicity with Fox, what do you think the barriers are for other mainstream media to absolutely be silent about this?
Do you have any ideas?
Well, it's a difficult issue. It's not covering an otter who miraculously escaped a boat wreck at the end of the news story every night. It's a complicated issue, one that most people could hardly even comprehend, wrap their minds around, not to mention believe. but it's an important story, and it's a story that needs to be covered, and Fox News actually learned it's a great story to cover. My first special on there was very highly rated, one of the highest rated of their investigative specials, and I think other media need to see that. They need to see that this is not a happy story, no matter how many otter jokes and face for radio jokes I make. But it's an important one, and it's a touching one, and it's one that needs to be said.
Yes, and I'll put in there that most reporters that I talk to, they believe us, and they want to do the story, but they go to their legal team, or they go to the news editor, and they will say, look, we don't do custody cases. And that just drives me crazy, because, and I always tell them, this is not a custody case. Everybody wants you to think it's a high-conflict custody case, that it's two people who hate each other fighting over a kid, and it's not. It's a case of a violent father, and it's a crime, and there is one parent who is a safe parent who is trying to protect this child from a very serious crime, and the system doesn't work. And so this is important. And I think as we go farther along in our issue, little by little, we've been getting more and more traction, more and more people to take this issue seriously. And so I think we will be getting more media on it.
Yeah, I think that as well. Oh, go ahead.
And I think as more young people speak out too, after the moms have pretty well exhausted themselves trying to be heard in court and publicly, that as young people like yourself, Damon, come forward, and Jennifer Collins with Courageous Kids Network, the more there's young people giving a voice to this and saying, this is what we lived. Because I think one of the biggest problems is that there's just not a respect given to children's voices, to their truth, to what they know, to what they feel. And if a child says, look, I don't feel safe there, I'm afraid there with that parent, that just automatically should be respected and listened to in the courts and publicly and everything. The fact that it's not is so morally wrong.
But you're back again with, you know, this is the way things should be. There's a lot of shoulds in there. But the courts have an agenda. And so even if children speak out, they don't care. I mean, you know, Damon was speaking out, but I do agree with you that the more kids who speak out publicly, what that will do is that will force them will force somebody to recognize the issue. But, you know, they simply don't care. The judges who are deciding these cases, they couldn't care less about the horror that these children are living. And it just really is unbelievable what these judges can disregard and just send these kids into these situations where they're being abused. It's just awful, really.
It is a crime. And do you want to say any more, Cindy, about what you perceive or believe to be the agenda, or what you've come to realize through all the documentation that you've gathered of other mothers and children, their stories, or parents, in some cases it's fathers. Could you say any more about that, what you believe to be the agenda, or what you think the agenda is, that they would be so reckless, so criminally negligent?
Yes, you know what, I'd like to talk more about the problem first, so that for the listeners who really aren't familiar with what is going on in the court, maybe we could talk first about what is going on, and then, you know, why I think it's going on, because I don't really want to say why I think it's going on until everybody knows what exactly is going on in the court.
Absolutely. So if you don't mind starting there and sharing what you think?
Sure. Well, first of all, I started Safe Kids International after a couple of events. And one of them was, I don't know if you remember, if you were watching TV when the Egyptian dictator fell, but the Egyptians had gotten together on social media and actually, I'm sure you know, actually brought down the Egyptian dictator. And at that moment, I said, wow. I said, you know what? If social media can bring down the dictator of a country, then it has to be able to bring down the dictators in these family courtrooms. And that's exactly what these judges are. There is no effective oversight or accountability. They do exactly what they want. They are dictators. They are little dictators in their own courtroom. So that was the first one. And then the second one, just a little while after that, the Penn State scandal happened. And when I saw that there were these three highly respected men who were being indicted for covering up sexual abuse, I realized that that was a turning point in our issue, because we had always, and you know, I had always said that day one was the cover-up, and people would kind of go, what? Or they'd laugh, or they'd say, oh yeah, you think it's a conspiracy and all this, and people didn't get it. But right after the Penn State thing happened, boy, people now, all you have to do is say there's a cover-up of sexual abuse, and these guys on there, you're like, oh really? Now they're getting it. You know, now they can understand that there's these forces that are, you know, getting these really high up people to cover up the abuse. And so those two things came together, and I went, there's got to be some way we can unite on social media and bring these judges down. And that's what gave me the idea for Safe Kids International.
Wow, and I just want to jump in here for a second, Cindy, and I want to first thank you for Safe Kids International, because I want to agree with everything you just said. This is a criminal, an organized crime. There's only particular cases. It can affect a mother or a father. It is set protocol within the family law courts. I've seen it as a retired guardian ad litem for family law and child protective, and then I'm living it in my own personal life. There's even before first I want to say it typically starts with us being forced to go seek protection for our children in a family law court versus a criminal court, and then it's set up ahead of time. It's already predestined that the children will not ever be heard, will not ever be listened to. It doesn't even matter how much mountains of evidence is brought in before the judge. That judge is still going to sign an order sending that child's life into the hands of their abuser. So I just want to say thank you to Safe Kids International for bringing awareness. And I agree, it's going to take social media as one of the solutions. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we're living in a really special time right now when we have this tool to use. You know, it's just an amazing check on the power of government officials to be able to go public and, you know, put the focus on people who are doing these and responsible for the corruption. And I decided that if we are fighting something, we needed a name for it. We needed a term for it, because until you have a label for something, you really don't, you can't really say what it is that you're fighting, because what we are fighting has been covered up for so long, there hasn't been really a way to describe it. So what I call it, my term is court-licensed abuse, and I got the term from Dr. Carolyn Taylor, who wrote a book called Court-Licensed Abuse. And this is a wonderful book, but it actually deals with criminal courts, not family courts. But I read this when I was in hiding. In fact, I did a lot of research when I was in hiding. It was a great time to research our whole issue and look at the history and look all about every aspect of it. And so anyway, this was one book that really impressed me a lot. A very similar thing is going on in criminal court with the cover-up of abuse. It's not so much a cover-up there as the attorneys and the legal professionals all have methodology that they use. They have tactics that they use, strategies where it keeps evidence out, or it distorts the evidence or manipulates it, or you get the kid up on the stand and then they cross-examine them in a way that is very tricky and deceitful, and they use the false memory syndrome in criminal court, whereas they use the, you know how we have PAS, parental alienation syndrome, in family court, they have false memory syndrome. And so it's kind of a parallel sort of thing. In fact, I know a professor of mine actually knows people that are in both. So the false memory people and the PIS people are together. There's an overlap. And she goes all around the country fighting against this false memory syndrome, which they're accusing the child of having a false memory of abuse. They're accusing therapists of implanting false memories. So anyway, in criminal court, they have different strategies, but the end result is the same. The child is silenced, the perpetrator is not punished, and a lot of times the child goes right back and lives with the perpetrator.
Yep. In almost every single case, and the parent is left fighting for years and years with everything they have while also running and hiding scared for their own lives, but also fighting for the children, and they're left until the child ages out at age 18, or as Damon did, found some way to use the law to give him his freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or some of them don't make it. There are a lot of children being killed. A lot of children being killed by their own abusers that they were court-ordered into the arms of.
Yeah, it's very, very serious. What's going on is just incredibly serious, and it's about time that it's getting attention. But
and that's what's so sad about when you were talking earlier, and you mentioned that it's going to be voices of the children who have aged out, who have survived, children like me, that are going to bring awareness. And what's so sad about that, as I mentioned earlier, is that so few do. So few success stories are out there. And those that are tend to be very highly traumatized.
Exactly.
The kids may have survived, but they were broken. Maybe they were brainwashed. All of these happen. And that's why, I mean, this issue isn't new. But because there are so few success stories, we don't have that legion of young children who are able to talk about this and speak out as we need.
Yeah. Damon, did you seek counsel or anything like that before you decided to go this route?
I've had a lot of attorneys, and I mean, as I mentioned, I went through all the legal means at my disposal, and I did have an attorney for all of those. In fact, I couldn't show up to court myself because I was in hiding at the time. So I did have an attorney help me with all of that, trying to get custody, trying to file for emancipation, filing for a protective order. I did have attorneys help me with that. So those were good attorneys. I have also had attorneys that have completely sold me out. The court-appointed ones did not help me, did not fight for me. The first one I had not only didn't fight for me, he fought against me, my own attorney. So,
well, we found out the other night, actually last night, the reason he did that was because he was losing money on not getting you fostered out or to your father.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't think Damon knows what you're talking about, Stephen.
Well, there are kickbacks. There's funds. There's federal funds that the fathers can draw from, and there are also federal funds that go to the court system when a child gets fostered out or gets handed over to the abuser.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, that didn't come into play in our case at all.
Exactly. That's what I was saying. He and the courts were losing money. That's why he didn't help you. I'm assuming you did say a he, right? The court-appointed attorney?
To some extent, my attorney may have been getting kickbacks. For example, there have been a lot of money poured in our very long case into psychologists, supervisors, that sort of thing. It's not unreasonable to think that the players in it who facilitated it were getting some sort of cutbacks from that, but there, I don't have any evidence of any of that.
No, no, and that's fine, and that's fine. But there are other people that have come out, and that evidence is out there.
Oh yes, that's a huge issue with the federal funding, and yeah, that is part of what keeps this thing going. But in my opinion, it's not the main thing. So when I get to the point where I'm telling you what I think the main thing is, it's, I know that I've heard others talk about the federal funding and the money and all, and I know that's a big part, but I don't think it's the actual core cause of what's going on. I think it's much deeper than that. But I wanted to talk a little bit about how they go about covering up abuse, because like Donna was saying, and like so many of us say, when we walk into the court system, we might not know the day we walk in it's rigged, but soon after we look back and say, wow, you know, they knew which way our case was going to go from day one, before we even walked in. It didn't matter. I mean, we argued our cases great. We put all the facts and evidence out that is way more than enough to meet preponderance of evidence that's necessary to protect children from abuse. And the cases all hit a certain pattern going through there that you can't get above. And even people, I know women who have spent, you know, $1 million on a good attorney. There's an attorney named Richard Ducote. He knows these cases inside out, upside down. He's an excellent attorney. He goes in there and does everything you possibly can do. And you know what? Most of the time, it maybe helped a little bit to get supervised visits or something, but the child is virtually never protected as far as I know. So these cases are rigged, and they have certain strategies that they use from the beginning all the way through to the end to make sure that the abuse is covered up and that the abuser in the end will get custody and that the children are silenced and that the mother is silenced.
Yes.
So does that make sense to you guys?
Sure it does. Yeah. No, I just wanted to make a statement. I've made on other shows, on previous shows also. Whoops, somebody's upset there. Somebody got excited there. But back when I was a young boy, my parents divorced at the age of 8. And I can remember all the way up and through my mid-20s. It was virtually unheard of for a man to get custody of a child or children, no matter what. The woman almost had to be a serial murderer not to get custody, especially in the state of Michigan. It was one of the worst here. It really didn't matter a lot what the woman did. She normally got custody. And obviously, right around that same time, the mid-80s, something changed. The this parental alienation syndrome and the subsequent federal funding changed.
Yeah, and there was one other factor, too, is that in the 80s is when child support started to be enforced. And so up until that time, a lot of men got away with, you know, they didn't really want custody. And the good men didn't have a problem paying child support.
Right.
But there was a certain subset of men who were angry. They didn't want to pay child support. And so the angry ones in before that time, well, if they didn't have to pay child support, they just disappeared. They were angry. They were out of the picture.
Yeah,
but
I know.
But now in the 80s, they couldn't get out of the picture because the government was after them and they were supposed to pay. And then so the way they tried to get out of child support was to try to get custody. So you have this subgroup of abuser and angry men who are very vocal, and they started coming up with helping develop these strategies through the Father's Rights groups, how to wrest custody away from a good mother. So I think all of those factors kind of came in the 80s at the same time, and you know, then we had this nightmare scenario that's been going on ever since.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Are you still, Donna? Tanis?
Yes,
I'd actually like to interject here. It's Tanis. Actually, that during the 80s, too, there was a brief period of time where children who disclosed sexual abuse were believed. And services were in place, social services and government services, grants were in place. To give children who disclose sexual abuse therapy and support. And I think there was a backlash to that, too, during the 80s. So the children who alleged sexual abuse in divorce from that point on were treated like the victims who went through criminal court and seen as, you know, making it up or not being believed, blaming the mother, accusing her of parental alienation. So after a brief period of time where there was this belief of children, there was an immediate backlash.
Well, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Donna.
Well, I was just going to add that basically what I've seen personally and professionally here in the state of Maine is that these are criminals that are used in the family law courts and hiding under the guise of a parent to escape any and all criminal charges for their behavior. And they've got a huge following, huge organized ring of people around them in powerful positions that protect them. In the meantime, the children are never going to be listening.
No, I'm so ready to work out.
What's going on there?
Hi, caller.
Can you hang that one up?
Yes, I just did.
Thank you. So what ends up happening is this crime ring, which it is a crime ring. That's exactly what it is. I've seen it. It affects mothers and fathers. A mother, an evil, abusive mother, can go into a courthouse and use the same protocol and kidnap their child from a loving father. I've seen it. I've worked them. But what I'm going to say is all children are immediately silenced, and then the mother or the father, doesn't matter, the loving parent, their credibility is immediately destroyed. They're attacked, their character, their emotional, mental abuse, they themselves are left in danger because the custody court refused to protect them by issuing a proper protection from abuse order. So that's basically what this is, and it affects all of us. And this is why it's going to take all of us to help all of our children and bring this down. Can we talk a little more about Safe Kids International and what you've been doing?
Sure, yeah. When I first got started, we were doing what we called Twitter Blasts, and that was we would target a celebrity and we'd all tweet them at the same time and try to get them to take our issue. And that didn't work out so well. None of the celebrities wanted to. It was early on before Penn State and all, or actually it was after Penn State, so I thought it would work, but it still didn't work. Anyway, so it was sort of evolving, how am I going to use social media to bring these judges down? And so then I started doing court watches, and then the court watches turned into judge watches. And so that's the main way we're using social media, is with judge watches. And with the judge watches, what we do is we have an event, and it's a typical court licensed abuse case where the parent who reported the abuse, which is virtually always the mother in these cases, and I know what you're saying, Donna, about there's some fathers too, but it's extremely rare for the fathers to have the same scenario that happens to the mothers. The fathers are very rarely, in my experience, they never get retaliated against or get the severe kinds of reactions and punishments that mothers get, where the mothers lose children completely, like you did, Donna, and I'm not sure about your case, Tanis, but like I did, there's so many of us are treated in such a draconian manner. I mean, there's just no explanation for the kind of severe punishments they use, taking our children away completely, throwing us in jail, sanctioning us hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, I've actually never seen that happen to a man, so I really focus on court license abuse cases at Safe Kids International. That's why it's almost all, it's virtually all mothers, the cases that I take, because they need to fit that criteria.
Right. And I'm saying professionally in the state of Maine, just as an owner of the hands-on parenting program, I've had more fathers than mothers in the state of Maine that were ripped away from their child, fought for years, and that lost everything, became homeless. And then even after the fact, when their child aged out and were released from the abusive grips of their mother, they hated their father and didn't want anything to do with their father. You know, the Stockholm syndrome or whatever you want to call it, just felt like their father wasn't there for them. So I'm just going to state for the record, personally and professionally, I've seen it for years, that fathers are impacted, and at least in the state of Maine, because I've covered from tip to tip, I've seen it more so with the fathers. They just, it's not as publicized as it is for mothers. It just isn't, for various reasons.
Hey Donna, can we take a break for can we take a break at the hour here?
Yep, that sounds great. Thank
Since
you,
we are
Steven.
At the hour, okay. All right, I'm gonna put about I don't know about a 7 minute break in there so we can go do something if we need to. And welcome back, everyone. Okay, we had a nice little
Melinda
break there.
Melinda is on. Can anyone hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Merrily.
How about Melinda?
Oh, you're Melinda?
Yeah.
Okay. I think they want to limit any kind of comments or questions until about
the last half hour. Got
yes.
it.
Yes.
I'll
okay.
be quiet.
All right, Donna. Where did we leave off at?
Well, I want to kind of give the floor back to Cindy to continue talking about Safe Kids International and the wonderful work that they do.
Okay. Well, we have. The social media that we do is the main thing, but when I get into, I want to talk a little bit about what's going on, why it's going on, and then the solutions that Safe Kids International is pushing, and so then we'll come into more of what we're doing. I'll stick with just the most important thing. We have a two-pronged approach that we're doing, which is to expose the judges, to hold the judges accountable. And then the second one is to get legislation enacted which will get these cases out of family court, because in my opinion, that's about the only thing that is going to solve this problem. But anyway, before we talk about that, I'd just like to go over the different tactics that are used that I think if there's lots of protective moms on, you'll be able to relate to these. What happens when mothers go into court and they're trying to protect their child. I mean, and it's mostly mothers. I agree there are some fathers too. But what happens is they appoint attorneys for the child. They appoint psychologists. They have court-appointed officials, therapists, and supervisors, parenting coordinators, all kinds of people who steer the case to the protective parent alienating or lying about the abuse. So right from the very beginning, everybody knows this is an abuse case, and my job is to manipulate the data and the evidence to make it look like either mom's lying or she's mentally ill or she just believes her kid and she really shouldn't because she's overprotective. So there's a big push to shift the blame immediately and the focus onto the mom. And so then the mother spends most of her time defending herself from all of these accusations, which there is absolutely no evidence of. And even though there's a ton of evidence of the abuse, the whole trial, all the hearing, all the court procedure focuses on the pathology of the protective parent.
Exactly.
So I'm sure that Donna and Tanis have experienced that, have you?
Yes, absolutely. That's part of it. It's part of protecting them and the crimes being committed. It's part of covering up the child abuse and silencing everyone. It destroys the parent, the protective parent. As in my case, the minute that this started, the minute I went to the courts begging for protection for my sons, from that second on, it was already known that there's criminal elements here, because child abuse and domestic violence are criminal, and the protocol was tapped into, and it was already set that anybody that came onto my case from that point, like it was a judge switch at the last minute, and then appointed psychologists and guardian ad litem and such, all of them did nothing but work to try to destroy my credibility and my character. That was
exactly.
All good. Yeah.
It sounds like you have a classic court-licensed abuse case, because that's the way all of our cases go. They focus on us. They blame us. They even fabricate things about us. You know, it's not like if they don't have the evidence, they just make it up and bring it in, and everybody acts like it's true when, you know. So it's kind of a sham. The whole thing is a sham.
Exactly. The way it was approached, this is criminal elements in a family law court, but yet the way it was approached, because I was the protected parent seeking protection, was I was labeled by the judge in my court case as guilty until I proved myself innocent of not trying to brainwash my children or manipulate my children or whatever they were trying to allege I was doing to cover up the actual hospital records, police reports, police pictures, and everything else. That's mm-hmm. what it was. I'm guilty in a family law court until I prove myself innocent, when criminals are innocent until proven guilty in a criminal law court. And you're on the attack from the second you're in there. You're in the fight of your life to save your children.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not by accident. It's not something that they just don't get it and they think maybe you're wrong. I mean, this is a well-polished methodology that they use to turn things around on the protected parents. And so then after they are successful in turning the blame and the focus onto the mom, what they do a lot of times is they'll have secret hearings or ex partes. They will issue orders to separate the mother from the child, to isolate the children from the mother, because that is the way, that's the first step in covering up the abuse, because it's the first step in silencing the children and the mother. And then the threats come, the threats to, if you say anything more about the abuse, you're going to lose custody. And then they tell the children, if you say anything about the abuse, you're never going to see your mom again. And depending on the age of the child, they have different methods that they use. If the child's very young, they just put the child into the full custody of the abuser, and of course all the abuser has to do is threaten them, or sometimes not even that. The kid just knows I'm in trouble because I'm in his full custody. So that silences the child. Now, as the children get older, up near, you know, 8, 10, 12, they need to use what they call reunification therapists. Now, these reunification therapists, their whole thing that they specialize in is convincing the children either that they haven't been abused, which is they convince them to recant. That's the gold standard. What they really want them to do. If they can't get them to recant, then they get them to, they try to brainwash them into thinking they're not really sure it happened. Or if they can't even do that, like with my boys, they were so old by the time we got out of hiding, they had to use even if the abuse did happen, it's really not a good thing to keep going on about it, because your poor father, he could go to jail. You don't want him to go to jail, do you? And think of what it's going to do to your social life. What are your friends going to think if your father's a child molester? It'll destroy your social life. So they play all of these games, and they convince the children to compartmentalize off the truth in their mind and go along with it. But however they do it, they get the kids to be quiet about it.
Yep.
And then the kids get a little older, they put them in camps, and we have a bunch of kids in camps right now, and a bunch of kids that have been threatened to be put in camps if they don't be quiet. These camps are really the most horrific part of our whole issue, I think. Damon actually ran away. He was so scared of being put in one of these camps. The judge actually said on the record that since the brainwashing by the psychologist didn't work, of course she didn't use that word, but since the reunification didn't work, that we needed to send Damon out of state to a boarding school, and everybody knows what that means. It means that you're sent to these lockdown facilities where they can do whatever they want to the kids. They can withhold food, withhold sleep, put them in isolation, bind them, gag them, electroshock them. There's books written about this, and it's just horrific. And so, do you know them anything?
It's just pure torture. It's the same as you know, the kids are threatened with, and violence is instilled to keep them quiet. It's forcefully silencing them, taking away all of their humanity.
Yeah, it's just so. But they don't care. Anything they can do to shut the kids up, they will do. So that's the kids. And then as far as the mothers, they will threaten the mothers that if they keep making an issue out of the abuse, that they keep trying to protect their child, they'll never see their children again. I was told that on the record. I have that in the transcript. You're never going to see. Two judges actually said, we don't even care whether he was abused. I mean, not in those words. They said, it doesn't matter whether he's being abused. If you don't be quiet about it, then you're never going to see your kids again.
Yep.
So they were very brazen about it in my case. And so I have good records showing that, you know, that there was an agenda. And then the other tactics they use with the moms are they gag her. They tell her she can't speak to the media or she can't speak to anybody about the abuse. They seal the records. They keep evidence from coming in. Like, we have a couple of cases that we have videotapes, forensic videotapes of the kids in school living. And they won't let those tapes in, and they didn't let the tape in with Damon either. So anyway, those are the main, I just wanted to go over those main ways that there's many, many other ways that they cover up. Did you want to talk about any ways they cover up in your cases, Tanis or Dana or Donna?
Oh, go ahead, Tanis.
Well, I would just confirm that everything you're saying is very accurate. There is definitely a template, a formula, as I've referred to it, and often women don't realize as soon as it's only in retrospect or in connecting with other women that because women end up spending, mothers end up spending years often just traumatized and full of regret. Had I done this, had I done that, if I would have had this lawyer, if I would have brought this evidence in, or if I would have made this decision at this time, you know, and I think it's important for the mothers to hear that even if you've paid $1 million for legal help, you're not even defended and protected, and the children aren't. So I just confirm that this is what I've heard and experienced too.
Yes, I just remembered one of my friends said that, just like what you're saying, Hannah, she says she would watch me do all of these legal documents and everything, and she had been through it, and she had done that, and she was looking at me, she said, Cindy, you know what, you can do the most perfect legal documents, you can argue your case perfectly, but you know what? If you go in there and instead of presenting all that legal stuff, you just get up on the table and dance around in a bikini and, you know, don't put any legal arguments in, the same thing is going to happen.
Right.
And I'm like, well, why am I sitting here doing all this work, you know? And she was totally right. It was such a waste of time, of energy, of hoping that I would get the right legal argument and the right, and this was after, of course, six attorneys, which I had who all sold me out, and I decided to do it myself. But yeah, so it doesn't really matter about what attorney you have or what you do. There is an agenda, and it's going to happen, and you just have to deal with it that way.
Yep.
And that's part of the grief and the trauma is not only not being able to protect our children, but the lost time and energy and that time that should have been invested in raising our children going to this fruitless, futile battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. Exactly. And saved all that money from the attorneys, all that money we spent on attorneys, I'm bankrupt now, and I could have put my kids through Harvard with the amount of money I spent on the court case. So I really regret being sucked into it, and I hope that any women listening to this will hear that they're just going to suck every dollar out of you that they can. That's one of the tactics. They financially devastate you to give you even less power than before.
Yep.
So it really, no matter what you spend, no matter, you know, you get the best attorneys, just, that's why when I see the women online and they're trying to collect money for attorneys, I'm going, you know, first of all, I don't have any left, and second of all, it really is not going to help. It's so sad. It really is sad that they're, you know, that it's this way.
Right, and I just wanted to first say, like, Cindy, you're in California, correct?
Yes.
And Tannis, you're in Canada, Manitoba, Canada, and I'm
yes.
in Maine. And all three of us have the same court-licensed abuse that you're terming this, and we've all experienced the same thing with our children being kidnapped, and I agree with what you said. Evidence was covered up in my case. Lots of it. It was buried. It was ignored. It was thrown away, purposely not even submitted, so no one would ever see it or know about it. DAs refused to prosecute. I've gone to every elected official in the state of Maine more than once. They know who I am. They know my name. No one will get involved. The Attorney General refusing to get involved. Child Protective Services. I've gone all the way to Washington, D.C., to scream and protest in front of the White House and the Capitol, and my sons still remain in danger. What is it going to take? You know, here we talk about Damon, who bless his heart, had to go through a marriage in order to gain his freedom from it, and I currently have two boys still in sole custody of a dangerous man. I think you said it, Cindy, the social media or just the media in general. We need to get the media in general involved because this is so serious that it happens at international level, and there's nothing you can do. You fight with everything you have until you're completely powerless and running scared for your life.
You have to get the judges off the bench.
Yeah, and so you wonder, what could be the force driving this? Because I think you probably have experienced just this feeling of, oh, my God, what have I come up against? Really, we have appellate court judges. We have DAs outside of family court. We have, you know, really high up people that are determined to cover this up. And so, you know, I wrestled with this for a long time. Like I said, I researched it while I've been hiding. Pretty much the whole 10 years I've been trying to figure out what the heck is driving this. And I know that a lot of people have said, you know, it's the money, and I know that there is money that plays into it, but I really think, you know, and I've heard other things. I've heard, you know, there's children should have rights and they don't, and there's, there may be pedophile rings involved, and that the education and training, judges need to be educated and trained. But really, if you take those things away, I truly think that we would still have the same problem. There would still be a cover-up. So why is that?
Right.
Well, what I did was I looked all throughout history to see what was going on. And I'm dealing now with sexual abuse cases. I know a lot of the parents have really just physical abuse, serious, severe physical abuse. But most of the cases I come across that get this really severe reaction are the sexual abuse cases. So what I did was I looked back in history and I thought, wow, there has never ever been a time in history where men have not been able to sexually access their own children. Never. It's never happened. It's sort of part and parcel of the patriarchal social structure. And it almost seems like part of a deal or something like a deal that that men have always had, that they allow each other to access children, their own children, and also marginalized children, children who have fathers who don't have power, or children who are disabled, or children who are poor. And I think Sandusky is a good example of that. Sandusky was, you know, a well-off guy, and so he had the power to access his own kids, and then he even started a foundation for marginalized kids and accessed all of them. So I know that it's really unpopular to talk about this being a gendered issue, but I am going to ask people to consider dealing with this now, again, as the gendered issue it is. There is about 99.9% of the cases which involve fathers being the ones who are molesting the kids. A study just came out in Australia this month that also confirmed that that is approximately the percentages. So it's just fact that it's a gendered issue. There are a few cases, but in a way, the few cases are the exception proves the rule. And so if we identify this problem, the core of the problem, the cause is not money, but it's power, and that men have the power in family courts to make the case go their way, and women do not. In fact, women have never had power. I know that somebody was bringing up that for a while women would always get custody, but Dr. Phyllis Chesler has written a lot about this, and she said women have never had the right to custody, the power to have custody. The only reason that there was a time when women got custody was because men didn't want it. And so that sort of supports the idea that this is about power. It's about women never having gotten that power. In the 60s with the feminist movement, we got power to get in the workplace, to get a good education, and that's partly what caused this to happen, because once we got financially independent, we were able to walk out on abusive men. And when we walked out on abusive men, they weren't happy about that, and they wanted to continue their abuse and their control through the children, and that's exactly what they've done. And so we have a situation where women do not have the power to protect their own children in family courts. It doesn't exist. And so anyway, what do you think of that?
I think that's a very accurate analysis.
Oh, good, you think so. I was afraid I was going to get a lot of flack from this one, because people, you know, it's not politically correct to talk about you know, men being the problem or anything like that. But, you know, when you talk to us actually with this particular issue, that is what happens. And the fact is, too, is that the vast majority of fathers are great fathers. They don't abuse their power. But if they wanted to, they could. If my father had wanted to abuse his power, he could have. He just didn't. He was a great father. He was wonderful. And there are many, most men are, but for the percentage of men who are abusive, they still have this power. They can abuse their power, and they can use it. And so the solutions involve taking this power away. And then what happens with the judges is the judges get to enable this entitlement that men have had and have always had. And the reason why, in my opinion, that it is such a huge force that we're up against when we go in there is that this is part of the status quo. This is the old boys thing. This is the power that has been around for centuries and millennia, is that, you know, men can do what they want inside their family. And it's just a new manifestation right now, women having the power to challenge that, where we never had the power to challenge it before. So we have enough financial independence to get away from an abusive man. We walk away, we can make our own living, and but we still can't get our kids away from them. And so that is the transition period we're in now, is that we're in a whole new world where we need to get that power back. Or not back, we never had it. We need to get power to protect our children.
So we were talking yesterday, the day before, Cindy, some ideas, some solutions to this, where we can all come together and be a voice for our children. Like, what do you think it's going to take? It's the way to fight power is with more power. And in my mind, that's more people, good loving parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, everybody. It's going to take everyone with a good heart to come together and be the powerful force for all of our children.
Exactly. That's exactly. And that's why I started Save Kids. The subtitle is United to Save Kids from Court License Abuse. We have, and that's, yeah, because in order to go up against such huge power that's so so systemic, it's so ingrained in the system that really it's the kind of thing that calls for revolution. It is
right.
That deeply ingrained that we have to get all the good people together. And this involves good men. We need good men who don't abuse their power and don't like when other men are violent with women and children.
And that's it.
Historically, men,
that's right.
The good guys have always stayed quiet.
That's right.
So,
and that's exactly it. And that's why I keep the stand that I do. And I can never say that it's more mothers, more fathers, period. It's an abusive parent that is manipulating and abusing our family law courts to get out of child abuse or domestic violence or both. And I can never leave fathers out. I've seen way too many good fathers break down sobbing because they haven't seen their children for years. And they've lost everything trying to fight, and no one believes them, and nobody will listen to them. And everybody just thinks they're crazy or a druggie or an alcoholic or something that was an allegation that was thrown against them, just the same as a mother. I think it divides us when we focus on the gender topic. And I understand why you are. I completely understand. You and I have talked about this. I'm just saying, you know, because you asked about, you know, if we agree and what we've seen, and I'm just saying, if we're going to really make the difference as needed, we can't have divisions when we're talking about what we're going to do for a solution. We've got to have everyone with a heart, everyone that cares about a child, come together against all of those that don't and help save the lives of all of our children together.
Yeah, I think that this concept of if you label it as a gendered issue, there's going to be divisions, and that's what I'm trying to say isn't true. Just because it's a gendered issue where the vast majority of perpetrators are the fathers in the family and the vast majority of the victims are the children and the mothers, and the vast majority of the parent who's trying to protect their children is the mother, that's okay. The good man shouldn't mind that. That shouldn't be divisive between good men and women. It's only divisive between the abusive men because, you know, Stephen, when you hear this, I mean, wouldn't you just jump on board with the protective mothers and say, yeah, I don't really want these abusive men to get custody?
I don't want any abusive parent to get custody.
Right,
as a matter
right.
of a man or woman.
You know, good
yeah.
men.
Well, yeah, but definitely, I mean, obviously, but we're talking about if we see it as a gendered issue, it still is not divisive because it's not keeping the good men out. It's just saying, guys, we need you to stand up against those guys. And like I said, admittedly, there are some men that have problems. But the facts and the statistics and the research shows, and just my Facebook page, I mean, I get hundreds of these court-licensed abuse cases. And I think where the men come in when they have problems with the women, usually, unless the woman has a lot of money and status and power or resources, really they don't have problems taking kids away from women, I don't think. But, you know, Donna's bringing up these cases that I know happen. But I was also talking to Connie Valentine, who runs California Protective Parents, and she said that she's got over 5,000 cases, and virtually all of them, are mothers trying to protect their kids. So if we're going to get to the right solution for this, we have to get to the right, to the core of it, to the root of the problem. And so what we need to do is empower mothers to protect their children. We need to give mothers respect so that when they walk into the court, the first thing they hear is not, you're lying, or look at them like they're alienating, because that's the knee-jerk reaction when we go into court, is that women are not credible. And so that's the kind of attitude we need to change. We need to stand up for ourselves and say, this is not true. Only 1% of these allegations are false. The rest of them are true. We want to be respected. We want to be believed. And we want to be able to have the power. If we say that we believe our kids when they're saying they're abused, then those judges need to protect those children. They cannot continue to disrespect us, to denigrate us, to call us liars, to destroy us financially in every other way they can. So anyway, I get a little bit passionate about that because I've been doing this for a long time, and I really think that if we look at this as an issue of power rather than money, that I think that we'll go farther.
Yeah, I think you said it earlier at the beginning of the show too, when you were saying, you said something about, you know, we got to get the crimes out of the family law court. And that's what I've been saying all along. It's time to take, child abuse and domestic violence are crimes. There is no reason that any parent should be sent to a custody court when it involves a crime against a child. It should go to a criminal court where the perpetrator is held criminally accountable. And it takes the child immediately out of the equation, and it immediately protects the child. So that's the other thing.
And that is what Damon's Law is all about, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that because that is my number one solution for this problem and what that does. But it's a little tricky because people have been saying a lot lately that we need to get these in criminal court. But I don't know if people understand that criminal court has a very high burden. It's beyond a reasonable doubt. And the DAs will virtually never take sexual abuse cases. They always say there's not enough evidence, which a lot of times there isn't, for beyond a reasonable doubt. And so Damon's case went to the police, you know, the criminal court side, and it was kicked out for that very reason. Of course, the detective refused to get the physical evidence from the bed, which there would have been plenty of evidence. She refused to do it. That's part of the cover-up on the criminal side, is they also don't want to prosecute otherwise respectable, you know, fathers for this crime. There's just this ingrained attitude that they're not going to. But if we combine the idea that it should be treated as a crime, and then the jury can be given the option of the lower burden of proof, which is preponderance of evidence. And preponderance of evidence just means that it's more likely than not that the abuse has occurred. So with all of our cases, every case I've seen, there has been way more corroboration than just more likely than not. All of our cases would go to a jury, and then if the jury found by beyond a reasonable doubt, then the perpetrator would be convicted and do jail time or whatever, you know, anybody outside the family would get. And if there isn't enough for beyond a reasonable doubt, then the jury would have the option of preponderance. And if preponderance is found, which virtually all of our cases I'm convinced is easily preponderance of evidence, then it's not a conviction for a crime, but it is enough for a restraining order, a protective order, to be issued to protect the children until the children are 18. So that's the way Damon's Law is written, and we have to be very careful to not just say these cases need to go to criminal court, because they do. A lot of them go to criminal court and they get kicked out. So we need that second component, and we need to fight for juries to hear these cases, because until we get these cases out of the hands of judges, the ingrained bias and cover-up is going to continue. So
I agree, absolutely.
Well, Wendy,
so I agree also, and I just would like to add, I'm not sure what that noise is in the background. If we've got somebody else on the line, can they be muted?
We're getting a little bit of a feedback from somebody that's listening, yes.
Can you mute them, or can they mute themselves? Because
It's the 520-609.
Oh, that's me. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Can you mute your phone?
Yes. Is that better? I'm sorry.
There is an activist in UK, Brian Garish. He's done quite a bit of social media, and also the UK column. He produces that newspaper. He talks about the secret family courts, and one of the things that he recently, I guess it was actually a couple years ago, but you can pull up his things that he's done YouTubes and so forth, had interviews with media, mainstream and alternative media, and he suggests class action lawsuits and social media. There's still a lot of interference in the background. But he suggests really publicizing what you're doing, Cindy, with Safe Kids International and whoever else is doing that maybe with you, and what all the moms are doing with Facebook pages and sharing information move toward publicizing class action lawsuits.
Yeah, I've heard of that as a solution, and I've talked to a bunch of attorneys about it, and there's a lot of problems with class action lawsuits, so I kind of stopped going down that path. It would be great if it could be done. If somebody comes up with one, great, but I just haven't seen a realistic one happen, and I've had a bunch of attorneys tell me that because of the types of cases that we have, they just usually aren't. They don't usually go anywhere. They have a self-protective system where they declare everybody who is involved in our cases immune, and so they're really hard to sue. You can get around it once in a while. There's been a couple cases where they got around the immunity, but you know it's very rare. It's hard. But yeah, I agree that the social media is a good part. That's the other idea that I have, other than Damon's Law, which I think is the best idea. If we can get people behind that, and we can get these cases out of the judge's jurisdiction, then it's the people deciding. We've got people in power. We've got the jury in control. We're much more in control. The judges have a much more, a peripheral role. It's not a main role. They can still do, you know, keep evidence out and manipulate a little bit. But to me, that lower burden of proof is really not that hard. Even if they keep evidence out and even if they play all the tricks that we were talking about in Dr. Taylor's book, even if they used all of those strategies, it still, the cases would meet preponderance.
Hey,
so that is, for me, that is the number one solution. I don't have the funds to try to get Damon's Law legislated. If anybody knows of anybody wealthy out there that wants to do a really good thing to protect lots of kids, it's going to take a bit of funding because everybody's against it. I talked to the president of the California District Attorneys Association, and she just said, absolutely not, we won't support it. DAs hate these cases. Those were her exact words. And it's crazy because who cares whether they hate the cases? That's their job. But they will fight it. The lawyers will fight it. The psychologists will fight it. The fathers' rights groups will fight it. Because why? Because it'll work. Anything that's going to actually make a significant change in the number of children that are going to be protected is going to be fought like crazy in the legislature. So yep. It's going to take, like I say, kind of a revolution, kind of like what Donna's saying. We need to all really get together in numbers, big numbers, yep. And we have to be outraged. We have to let what is going on stoke our outrage to the point where we revolt against these people who are doing these horrific things to our children and getting away with it on a daily basis. We have kids suffering like crazy right now. We've got Donna's kids suffering, Tana's. We have a kid who just got sent to a camp in Utah, and God knows what's going on with her. I just pray for her all the time. And so we need to really get the public incensed about what's going on and demand this kind of change. But
yes, we do.
Hey, Donna.
Yeah, I was just going to ask if we could possibly open this up to some questions.
That's
now.
What I was just going to say. You want to do that?
Yeah. Melinda, are you still there?
Marilee's on.
I am.
Oh.
Hi, yes. Can you hear me? Hi. I'm just so proud to hear Damon and watch him grow up and that he's free. And his mom is just amazing. The story is incredible.
Yes.
And I thank her. And she's kept a lot of us sane for many, many years. I thank her. But one of the things that really I've been thinking about is that the buck stops with the judges. And these judges that make these horrendous decisions that lead to the severe neglect and the molestations and the murders of children, while they're on the bench, they're never held to, they're never held to any standard, and they don't take any responsibility. Even when a child is murdered, they don't look back. They don't even apologize.
Yeah, there's no accountability.
People left behind.
There's no accountability. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And so I had a conversation with a biker dude by the name of Dave Johnson down in Orange County. And he said, do you know that when judges are up for re-election, that they are not placed on the ballot unless somebody runs against them? But nobody knows that they're running because they're not on the ballot. And that in order to find out what's happening with these judges, that we all have to go down to our election boards, to the and check on lists, because they are legally bound to give us the lists of judges, boards of supervisors, and even school board elections that are taking place, who's running, when they're up for re-election, or judges who are up for reappointment. We need to find out when they're coming up. We need to find people, good lawyers, who will run against them. And when they're up for reappointment, we have to go en masse to wherever it is they're getting their report card and complain. And then there's this new website that a friend of mine sent me called gavelbangers.com. That's GAVELBANGERS.com. And every judge across the United States, every superior court judge in the, you know, and that, for us, it's family law and dependency law. Those judges' names are there, and we can get online and we can join with other people who have been hurt by judges. And they have to be gotten off the bench.
Yep. Exactly.
So that's my suggestion for 2014, including what Cindy does, because I'm on Safe Kids every single day just to see what's going on, to see if I can lend support. So thank you all.
Oh, bless your heart.
Love you, Donna. Love you, Cindy and Damon.
We love you too. Thank you so much. And you said it, the judges that have the blood of children on their hands are never ever looked back on and continue to preside on the bench. And in fact, it further is done in the media, because obviously the media is going to pick up the death of a child, but further cover up is done in deception through the media, because they only focus on the parent that killed the child. They never once bring it back to what started as a custody case, that abuser got custody of that child, and the judge who signed it. Never once.
Right. You know, when a child, an abuser loses it and, murders his spouse and his children and then turns the gun on himself or blows up the house with everybody inside, reporters stand in these shocked, beautiful, quiet neighborhoods interviewing people saying, gee, they were such nice people. He was such a good father. Yeah, well, you know, he just killed everyone. But they report the crimes, but they never report the source. And the source so mostly goes back to a domestic violence victim being forced into shared custody with her batterer. It happens every week in this country. And as the body count of small children rises, we need to start connecting these dots.
Exactly.
Hey, Donna?
Yes.
I think Mary Lee is still on the line, and she's been waiting patiently also.
Thank you so much, Melinda. It's so nice to hear from you on the show. Thank you.
Mary
Lee, are you there?
Mary Lee, you still on the line?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I actually had it on mute. So, yes, I've been listening, and I think it's a great show, and I think they all hit wonderful points on what's happening out here. I would think, and then just on this last thing with the judges, you know, to get these judges removed from the bench, you really need the attorneys to go up against them, because my judge got removed from the bench, and that's very rarely they will do that. I mean, it's like, you know, like two in about a 15-year period. But that is a way to do it. So that's a good idea, is to get them off the bench. And then the second thing, I was listening to the gender bias thing, and it just gets me hot, gets me a little angry, because really, it is the men that are the abusers in these cases. And yes, I will say there are good fathers out there, excellent fathers, but in the stats will prove that these men are the abusers. And it is a gender bias issue. It's been a gender bias issue for over 25 years. I've been involved in this for 25 years. And I've watched what's happened, and I've watched all these mothers come forward, and it's not just because I'm dealing with mothers. This is what's happening in our courts, and it's gender bias as far as even the judges go, and the money that's being fed underneath to the GALs and the CFIs, and everybody's getting money and kickbacks from this. But the main thing is that we need to take a look at our society of how we're raising our boys, because it will show, the stats will show that 90% of violence is happening in our country. It's coming from our boys. So whatever we're doing wrong, we're raising our boys wrong. And then the second thing is, yes, it's a gender bias issue, because men are the more violent bunch. And these women, just like these guys were saying, that are completely financially depleted to nothing, they can't fight for their kids. I have moms that are out on the street right now. They can't make it. Or moms that are stay-at-home moms. I've had moms that are multimillionaires that have lost every dime. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. They're losing. It's our system is failing and failing miserably. And I agree with Cindy and her idea and Damon's law. And I just like to see people get on the bandwagon here, because this is affecting everybody's life, not just ours, not just the mothers that went through this. This affects everybody's pocketbook, those taxpayers out there with the federal funding going into social services, the foster care. Colorado did the Fell to Death Here paper, you know, newspaper ran it forever, and Channel 9 News. We're talking kids dying. And I feel like my daughter, you know, Damon, Donna's kid, if they're all dying, it's a death. It's a death sentence to these kids. Maybe they survive it, but it's like a death sentence, and it's, yes, I've got to get in here. So all I want to say is I can't handle the gender bias thing. It is gender bias. It is not that these fathers are all going through this, and they're getting raw deal too. Yes, they do. I will admit they do. But percentage, it's next to nothing compared to what the women are going through. Nothing. That's all I just had to say that. So I'm done. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Yes, thank you for coming on.
I would like to make a point. It sure doesn't help the boys to be put in the custody of abusive fathers and be completely segregated, separated, isolated from their mothers that they felt safe and secure with. So,
either way, it's damaging no matter what. But all I'm making a point of is that mostly our men in this society, there are good men, and like what Cindy was saying, and Donna's saying, that we need to bring the good men in to help us. But it is the men that for the women.
Oh, I absolutely agree. this is Mary Lee.
Yes, it is.
And the other thing, we're talking about domestic violence, but even just looking at the digital evidence of child pornography, it's men that are sexually abusing children. And as much as people want to neutralize it, see, the problem with not assessing this or identifying this as a gender issue, we're not saying all men are abusers. We're not saying all men are sexual abusers. What we need is the men that aren't to say, hey, most men aren't. But the problem is a lot of men are jumping under, basically defending all men, all fathers, as, you know, as if all fathers are the same.
What they need to defend is the fact that the violence is starting with men, and really, you know, domestic violence has been mostly women being abused. I mean, I'm sure there are a few women. I don't even want to mention it, because really, if the pendulum is what it is.
I don't mean to interrupt. We have about 5 minutes left. I want to thank you, Marley. I want to give the last few minutes to Cindy to kind of wrap up about Safe Kids International and just to kind of thank her for even taking the time with us tonight.
And thank you, you guys, and thank you, Cindy, for doing what you're doing. Very much.
Oh, okay. Thank
All right, I'm getting off. I'll let you guys go. Oh, sorry.
Nice to see you, Marley.
You too, honey. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, we did have Charles Stecker come in too, Donna.
Oh, okay, Charles. Cindy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, Charles, do you have a question or comment?
Can you hear me?
Yes, and welcome. Nice to hear from you, Charles.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm just going to keep it real brief and short because I've got a lot of stuff to say, but I really don't want to bring it up right now. I want to say this. Damon, if you can hear me, I am extremely proud of you. I was you 30 years ago. I wasn't able to do anything but age out and get away from my abuser. And I invite you and your mother to come out on the road with me and meet me when I'm on the Turn Up the Volume tour this year and the next few years, and speak out and be that young man who's going to help other children, no matter whether they're male or female, to stand up and face their abusers, whether it's a mother or father abusing them, an aunt, an uncle, or a cousin, whoever it is. I applaud what you've done. And, you know, I'm there for you. God bless.
Wow, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. All right. Is Damon still there, Cindy?
Yeah, Dana's here. He heard that. He's that thing. And we'd love
Cindy,
to come
you're
out
on my Facebook.
You.
Cindy, you're on my Facebook page, so I actually sent you a message. We'll be able to catch up, and I want to chit-chat with Damon later. But in the meantime, I want to let you guys wrap this show up. God bless everybody. And
awesome.
There are good fathers out here. We need to all work together.
Yes, amen. And God bless you, too. Thank you for coming on, Charles.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Cindy, if you want to close out, Cindy, and Donna, and Tennis.
Okay, so we have about 5 minutes?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for having us on, and I'm hoping that we have listeners from Australia and Canada and France and Argentina. We have a great group of people in Argentina who are getting on board with our issue, and it's giving us a lot of power to have that recognition. We have judges there, psychologists, protective moms, and I know they've been on your show, Stephen, a lot of them, and so it's a really good time right now for us to all get together. We're being believed now for the first time in 40 years.
Yep.
We are doing the upper hand, well, I wouldn't say the upper hand exactly, but at least they can't discredit us like they could before. And I think they're getting a little nervous about how organized we're getting and we're all joining together, and we need to keep doing that. On Safe Kids International, I really think that if people are listening and they don't go on Facebook, please start to do that. You can use an alias, so you don't even have to use your name. Nobody knows who you are. You can go on. It's a really good way to dialogue. It's a really good way to keep up on what's going on. There's a lot of people on Facebook who are dealing with our issue who you can friend and get the information from. Safe Kids International is only for court licensed abuse. I do not post about anything else. I only post once or twice a day in a very well thought out post, so you're not going to get barraged with a bunch of posts if you like my page. So I just want to, if we have time, I just want to really quickly tell you about a couple things on Safe Kids right now. We're doing some letters to the commission. This is one way to hold judges accountable. We're going to the ethical commissions And if there is a possibility you can get your judge removed. What we're doing is collective complaints, so that normally when mothers would complain to the commission, they would just get thrown out. But now we're going to have Safe Kids International and a bunch of people behind every single complaint. So they're going to have to take it more seriously. And also what it will do is document the cover-up. If they show that this is happening all over the world, and we include those cases.
Could someone, sorry, it's just getting too distracting. Could whoever's on mute, if
whoever's
there's a lot of background noise.
Yeah,
no,
and here's Cindy.
That was actually 707 area code 889. That was...
Cindy, sorry about that. Please continue.
Oh, okay. And so, yeah, I'm trying to talk fast, but you can find out this on safekidsinternational.org. There's actually a page about the letters to the commission if you want to participate. Just contact me there. The other thing I really wanted to get in tonight is that we're doing a campaign for Donna. We just started one today to the district attorney in Maine, and we're asking her to prosecute the father for his violence against both Donna and the boys. And if we can get her to charge the father and issue a protective order for the sons, we might get them safe, and who knows, maybe they might even come back to Donna, but at least we're trying to get them away from the violent father. So if you go to Safe Kids International Facebook page, which is facebook.com/SafeKidsInternational, in the events, you click on the events, and the only event we have going now is that event, and you can click on join. And then that would be great. What we do is we email or call the DA, whichever one you prefer. If you like just picking up the phone and calling and telling her something, or you can email. And there is a copy and paste email that you can use. So it only really takes less than a minute. You go there, you copy and paste and send it off, and your voice will be heard, and it will help hopefully get Donna's voice back.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for mentioning that. Thank you for doing that. I think I've said to you earlier, and even when you offered how much this touches my heart that my sons are actually getting a voice through this event, I truly appreciate Safe Kids International for doing this. My sons have been forcefully silenced, and overwhelmingly touching that people are willing to step up and do something. People all over the world, like you mentioned, even in Argentina, there's such wonderful people there and judges and everyone that are just all pulling together for two children they've never met. So I know how much it touches me, so I know how much your organization touches other protective parents and children all over the world, so thank you for that. I also want to say, because I just want to make a call to anyone out there, judges, guardian ad litem, you know, mostly those in powerful positions that have a heart and want to do good and want to help and want to end this themselves. I know there are judges in the Augusta District Court here in Maine that sit right beside Judge Dobson that are good judges, and I know they don't want someone like her in their court bringing their names down. So I want to make a call out to everyone, all of us. It's going to take every single one of us all over in order to make the difference needed for all of our children. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I want to say thank you to you, Cindy, for coming on to Giving Children Hope. And to Damon, is he right there?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Damon, you are an amazing man. You are a hero to me for all that you've gone through, the courage it is taking to get you where you are today, to even the courage you've had to come on this show with us tonight and just share with us what your life has been and what it has entailed and what you've been forced to do just to save your life. You are very brave. You got yourself out of that. You stepped up to the plate, and you just knew what was happening, knew what was wrong, and you did what you had to do. God bless your heart, Damon. You're a very courageous young man, and I know tonight you inspired hope in a lot of children. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just glad I was able to get to the point I'm at now.
Yes, me too.
Yes, and I thank everybody for coming on. It's been a very good, informative show, and thank you, Damon.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Yes, and Cindy. Donna.
Thank you very much for having us on.
Thank you, Stephen.
Donna,
thank you,
Tannis.
Cindy and Damon and Tannis.
Thank you. It's been a privilege.
thank you to everyone out there that listened in tonight. We're all going to pull together. Please look up Save Kids International on Facebook, also SaveKidsInternational.org. Did I get that one right, Cindy?
Yes.
Okay. Also, I just run kind of my own campaign working with everyone else, but I do it off of my personal Facebook page doing outreach. Anyone and everyone can send me a friend request. I hide nothing. Everything is absolutely public. This is just a way to get everyone to kind of reach out and pull together. It's going to take all of us to make the difference and be the voice for all of our children. So thank you again, everybody.
All right. Thanks, Donna. Thanks, Tana. Stephen.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Yep. And I'm going to go ahead and end this here then. So I guess I can keep whoever wants to stay on the Skype call for a few minutes, but not very long. But
okay.
We're going to go ahead and end this here. This has been another Giving Children Hope radio / TV video interview. So good night, everyone. Till next time. And thank you.